Do you ever see a successful woman on your feed or in a magazine and think, wow, it must be nice to have it so easy? Well, think again. Behind that glossy cover or smiling face is a ton of hard work, countless failures, and endless learning experiences. I'm Rebecca Minkoff, and I'm here to tell you that success isn't a walk in the park. It takes grit, resilience, and a willingness to take risks. That's why I created Superwoman, a podcast that peels back the varnish and gets into the nitty-gritty of what it takes to make it as a woman in today's world. From luminaries and game changers to women you've never heard of but should, this podcast is here to inspire you to take your next leap, no matter how daunting it may seem. We'll explore the sacrifices these women have made, the highs and lows they've experienced, and the lessons they've learned along the way. So if you're ready to be inspired and learn from some of the most successful women out there, join me on Superwomen. Together, we'll uncover the stories behind the successes and prove that with hard work, determination, and a little bit of luck, anything is possible.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superwomen. Welcome back for another incredible episode. Today's guest is Emily Hecate, the founder of Petite Plume. Would you believe that she was a CIA officer for the last 20 years and only recently was able to blow her cover? We talk about what it was like to be at the CIA, a massive shift to, of all things, loungewear and pajamas, and why she is so bullish on this business and the game-changing event that took her life, turned it upside down, but was the launch pad for her new and very successful business. Take a listen. Okay. I was very excited to be able to interview you. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I think what got my attention was former CIA officer turned designer owner of Petite Plume pajamas. So I saw those two things and I was like, I need to know how you go from that to what you're doing now. So, you know, I know.
Natural pivot.
Totally.
I'm probably the second one you've had on with that story this week.
Yes, it's very common. So what got you interested in working with the CIA? Let's start there.
Oh, goodness. You're starting strong. I was always interested in international. So by the time I graduated high school, I spoke French fluently. Then I went to university and I picked up German. So by the time I graduated university, I spoke French and German and English fluently. And then I went briefly to the White House. And then
you just went there?
Well, I had a job at the White House. I went there and knocked on the door, yes, as you do. And then I went to the State Department.
Okay.
And then 9/11 happened and I had started learning Russian on September 10th, 2001.
Wow.
I had one class and then 9/11 happened. And now my fourth language is Arabic.
Oh, my gosh.
So I always had this proclivity toward international travel. I had studied abroad during university. I was in Austria and France. I was the first Notre Dame student to do two semesters abroad in two different languages. So there was that proclivity. I really enjoyed the global scenarios, what was nice. A nice difference when you're at the White House, every issue is about whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether you're on the left or whether you're on the right. When I went to the State Department, we were all on the same team, and that was really appealing.
Yeah.
We were all working to forward American foreign policy.
Yeah.
And then I got the tap on the shoulder, and I went over to the agency. So that was sort of, post 9/11, things were happening very quickly. We had a very clear objective. We were trying to keep America safe.
Yeah.
And, the agency has an enormous capacity to get things done and collect information, and it puts you right to where the heart of the problem is. I was in Baghdad right after the invasion. Yeah. So it's been a wild ride, shall we say. And then I lived in 9 different countries, both with the State Department and with the agency. I lived in 9 different countries in the Middle East, Asia, and Africa.
And you did this with 4 children.
Not
all at once.
I started picking them up country by country. I was fearless. I am for the first many years. Yeah. And I think I first felt that vulnerability when I had my first son in 2008.
Right, because your heart is outside your body now.
Yes, exactly. I can't. When I look back on it, I truly was. There was a story. So when I was in Baghdad early on, it was before there was a green zone. And just to go to a meeting, you had to leave the airport and go through an area called RPG Alley, where there were apartment buildings on either side, and they could stand there with shoulder-held grenades and fire them at your vehicle. And none of the vehicles, armored or not, could withstand a direct hit from those. So even before you left the compound, then you had the IEDs, the improvised explosive devices. There were thousands of them in the road when I was there. So even getting to your meeting before you actually sat down, and then you had the threats of actually meeting with someone, and things would explode, et cetera, et cetera. There were all those different steps. So I do remember standing there with a case officer who I respected. We had been through training together, and he had arrived as I was sort of on my way out, and we were going to our meeting, and he was just shaking. And I looked at him, and I thought, God, I should be more nervous than I am. But at the time, the mission was clear. You know, I think it would have been a different story if I had had little people depending on me.
Yeah.
So that's, I feel like, where it all changed, or started to change anyway.
And you began to go, okay, I need to be more, just.
I'd like to keep myself a little bit safer. And the funny thing is when you juxtapose, okay, so my first, let's say, experience in the overseas in that realm was in Iraq. In Baghdad, which is very different than any place else. So now your danger meter is really broken, because now any other assignment that you have, even if you are taking certain risks, it's nowhere near what you were taking in Baghdad.
Right. So then you're thinking, it's cocky.
Well, you're just thinking, you know, this is a really safe job compared to what was there.
Yeah.
So then you start to think about it. And then when you talk to other people, they say, wait, what?
Yeah.
I was like, well, then it wasn't like Baghdad. They're like, suicide vest.
So you're not scared of much. You don't strike me then as someone who gets scared that easily, if that's.
No.
Right.
No, definitely a high risk tolerance.
And you've always been that way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can talk to my parents. I've given them heart attacks here. I have 2 brothers, but I would be at the top of the tree.
Oh, my God. So yeah. You meet your husband while you are an officer.
Yes, while I was in the government.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he came, and then he was a part of all these. He was there in the locations with you, not necessarily working with you.
Not early on. We actually got married along the way.
Okay.
So they did say, you know, the agency is the best dating service. It was before Match.com. Let me just throw that out there. But they said, look around. Everyone's been drug tested, background checked, right. And likes to travel.
Right.
So there you go.
So there you go. That cuts out a lot of the things that people have to worry about.
Yeah.
See. Okay, so I'd like to go the day that you are in East Africa, maybe, and you wake up and you say, I'm out. It's pajama time.
That was a very,
talk me through that moment.
Very distinct moment.
Okay.
I was going to a high-threat meeting on an island in the Indian Ocean.
Okay, and you had the babies at this point.
I had 3 little boys at the time, and my youngest one wasn't even a year old.
Okay.
So it's, you know, there's lots of stories leading up to this where, you know, one of my sons had 105 fever and I had to go. I couldn't just call and say, I'm sorry, my son's sick, right. Because we had been arranging a meeting.
You don't get to
meeting.
Do that at the agency.
You don't. You've got, you know, there's a lot that goes into arranging these meetings. Again, it's not like calling in sick. And I remember looking at my husband and saying, if he has malaria, I can be home tonight. You know, but think about that. You know, I think he was my 2-year-old at the time, had 105 fever, 104.5, something like that. And I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then fast forward to I'm going to this meeting in the Indian Ocean and the plane hits a storm and starts to go out of control. And the plane is spinning sideways.
Stop
through
it.
The air. People are screaming. This is a commercial airliner. It's a single prop plane. It's really small. The lights go out. plane spinning sideways.
What does that even mean, spinning sideways? Can we elaborate on
this? Like the lights were out, you lose the feeling of which way's up and you're kind of careening through, is what it feels like. And then as they were in the brace position for impact.
For the ocean.
We're about to hit that moment of, oh my God, all I could see were the faces. Okay, I can do this.
No, it's fine.
All I could see were the faces of my three little boys. And I felt this profound sadness that they were going to grow up without a mom.
Oh my God.
And that was a very pivotal moment, shall we say.
Extraordinary.
And that really set that next the wheels in motion for the next chapter. I had already had some ideas in my head. You know, it's never the right time to start a business. Certainly not when you're living in East Africa. Certainly not when you have a full-time job. Certainly not when you have three little kids at home. But I put one foot in front of the other. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And I started that process that week.
Wow.
To launch a sleepwear company.
Can we just go back 5 seconds to your bracing for impact? Yeah. Did you hit? Did you?
No. So by the grace of God, it corrected or I wouldn't be here right now.
Oh my gosh.
There was no after action report. The cockpit was closed. It was not a government plane. It was just a commercial. So I never got a follow up. I've talked to some pilots who are trying to guess what it was in hindsight, but the result is I'm here. And it just put everything into perspective really quickly.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine. I think when it's turbulent on a regular plane, I'm like freaking out.
So you think I would now, but at this point, I'm fine on an airplane.
Wow.
Here's the thought is, me being scared or me being not scared is not gonna affect the result.
Right.
So I might as well relax. My husband sleeps like a baby through turbulence.
Right.
Always has.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? It's nothing, my concerns, my stress, none of that is going to impact the results. So now I'm fine.
Wow. So what inspired you to start Petite Plume? I mean, I know it was that moment, but what, you know, of all the ways you went, it could have been a jewelry company, clothing. Like, why did you pick sleepwear?
I thought I saw a gap in the U.S. market.
Okay.
I did. So I had lived in France earlier in for university and before then. And you can literally walk into the grocery store in France and you can get these 100% cotton, beautiful kids' pajamas. And at that point, the American children's sleepwear market had gone toward the tight fit.
Right.
And I didn't understand that at the time, why. Now I realize it's these strict CPSC regulations. So while I—
Tight and flame retardant.
Yes, and flame retardant, exactly. So while my original plan was to have these beautiful, like, you know, the old-fashioned pajamas, the ones with the buttons and the nightgowns, I wanted to do that in 100% cotton. But you can't do that unless you're willing to dip them in chemicals and horrible chemicals. And that was never the plan. So we pioneered a fabric that is inherently flame retardant, using the highest level of cotton and blending it with an inherently flame retardant fiber, like a tweaked wool. And so we could bring children's pajamas to the market very soft without using any chemicals and inherently flame retardant, which was a big deal. It was really, really hard. It was really difficult. Our first samples were made in a factory where they make firemen's uniforms. But once we perfected it, and I remember there were a lot of frustrations along the way, but I remember reading about Robert Taylor, the gentleman who invented liquid soap, and he said it was really hard. And he said every time he ran into a hurdle, he rejoiced because he knew half of his competitors had just quit. Was really, really hard. But by the time I got to the finish line and we launched in 2015, we were in 200 stores in the first year.
Wow.
So
that's pretty incredible. I credit your intensity and your focus and drive to that. Would you say that it was also, you know, what else contributed to that?
I think it was also luck. There is, you know, you can do everything right. And I think I had the advantage of having lived overseas in some of these countries. So I knew how to negotiate. I knew, you know, expectations. But let's be very honest, I didn't have deep pockets. My husband and I both worked for the government. We put a lot of our money into that first order. And if it had arrived not in the condition or the samples that we had approved, like anything could have gone wrong or along the way.
Yeah.
But there's that second part, which is resilience.
Yeah.
Right. And I honestly believe that you cannot fail when you have resilience.
I love that you say that because I think women can take failure so personally and then they just give up. Not just women, lots of people. Mm-hmm. And then it's that ability to bounce back that sometimes is the reason why you're the last woman standing, right? Is that you're the only one that got back up and said, I'm still going for it. Right? Like a beat up face.
If you talk to anybody, let's say who's in their 80s,
yeah.
Nobody has had this easy, effortless run.
Correct.
Everybody has ups and downs.
Yeah.
But I believe success comes when you keep getting back up and failure is not an option.
Yep, for sure. I love that you say that. I talk about that a lot in my book. So we're kindred spirits there. I'd love to touch on, you know, I have to temper the idea that like hard times for you in this space, does it feel not as difficult because you were in such an extreme situation before, whereas another entrepreneur could just like start this and encounter difficulty and be like, oh, this was hard. But you're like, dude, I had to go through RPG Alley or almost die in an airplane. Like, my order's not coming in on time. I can live.
Yes. That's. I think there's the difference. Okay, let's just take Baghdad out of the scenario. But okay. In the normal agency life, not every day is, oh, my God, we're going into this high-threat meeting.
Right.
You really do arrange for these. And then there's this very boring part where you have to write it up.
Right.
Right? You go back and you write the most boring cables, you know, on the planet. Some of them, not the intel cables, but sometimes the logistical. Anyway, that's more than anybody wants to know. But the difference is that when you're running your own company, every day there's something new, a new challenge. There's a new stress. There's a new this. There's a new that. So there you don't get as much of those, or at least I haven't gotten to that point yet where, you get to relax and
it doesn't ever happen. I have news for you. There's no relaxing.
But we had last January, so we made it through the holidays. A sleepwear company, you can imagine, we're very busy at the holidays.
Yes.
We made it through the holidays, and then we had a whole truck go missing. You know, it was our largest
just
order of
missing?
Silk. It was stolen through the port. It was brought on and brought out very quickly. It was over $1 million worth of goods, which we had it insured for the cost, not the retail.
Right.
But in the end, that might have truly stressed somebody out. But I thought, nobody's died.
Right.
Everything's fine.
And your insurance.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. But then that sets you back, right?
Yes.
Because you can't fulfill orders and make your next production round.
Yes.
All
and
that
we had a
stuff.
Big, exciting collaboration happening with the Colony in Palm Beach, which we still did. And it went very wildly. It was excellent. We sold out. But we had to delay that a little bit too.
Right.
So you just adjust. You adapt. It's not ideal, but everything's fine.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So would you say your kids adapting to the change of like mom's in a high stress job, you're living in East Africa, and then you're like, let's move to Chicago, what that journey was like for you as a mother and as starting your business?
I don't think my children – well, first of all, my children didn't know that I worked for the agency until a year ago.
Okay.
My brothers didn't know I worked for the agency. My parents knew because we had to tell one person before we went into a dangerous place.
So what did your brothers think you did?
That I was a diplomat working at the embassy.
Okay.
It's a pretty good cover. We look like everybody else.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So when you told your kids and you're like, we're leaving East Africa, we're going to Chicago, and by the way, ta-da.
Ta-da. No, the ta-da came later. So we actually, we have now been in Chicago for 5 years, which is the longest place I've lived for 5 years since high school.
Okay.
Because we moved every year, every 2 years, every 3 years with the government, which is tough. So we got settled in Chicago. We moved back in late 2018, which was such a godsend because we got to get settled a little bit and make some friends before we plunged into that deep, dark days of the pandemic.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then if we were still overseas, I'm sure that I would have been evacuated with my kids and my husband would have stayed behind. So again, really lucky that we were back stateside because a lot of my colleagues had to go through that. And I saw it. I saw it. I saw the families being torn apart because you're living in countries that can't support you if you get sick.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a whole nother challenge for and everybody still doing that.
I can't believe it's still – you mean there's families that are still torn apart like that?
Well, not with the pandemic, but yeah, there are a lot of locations in the world right now where it's unaccompanied. So wow. You can go in to Yemen or Somalia or Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan, any of these places, and they're unaccompanied tours. So
wow.
The dependents stay behind.
Right. Gosh, I think I feel guilty when I leave my kids for a couple days. I can't imagine like the emotion of having to leave your kids for that long. Have you struggled with staying put? Like going somewhere all the time and now you're just...
And then we went from living, it's called like third culture kids, third culture lives, where you're like, oh, we have a long weekend. Should we go on safari? Should we fly to Cape Town?
Right.
Because once you're somewhere, it's very easy to travel.
Except for the United States, where there's nowhere worth traveling, but yes.
Oh, come on. I think there's a lot of, if that was, I totally disagree with that. We went out west during the pandemic. We did our social distance on horseback.
Oh, nice.
There's so much in the U.S. that it's been fun to explore it from that perspective.
Yeah.
But back to your other question, to go from living in this house, we had a big yard with chickens in Africa, and then suddenly we were in this small house in March when the pandemic opened, and
right.
It was freezing, and suddenly we were really confined to the walls of this little house in Chicago.
Yeah.
There was a moment where it was like, that was quite a juxtaposition to go where you feel like you're traveling. We couldn't make it back to the U.S. for Christmas one year, so we went to France. I have family in France.
Right.
You know, you're just always moving, and you're talking to other people who are like, hey, we just got here from Jordan. Hey, we just got here from, you know, Sri Lanka, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it really is a very different world that you're living in, and then suddenly you're in a much smaller scenario, especially during a global pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But it was a challenge for everyone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everyone had
different
challenges.
Yes.
So what's next for the brand? What are you excited about?
You know, there's so many exciting things happening. Sometimes it's like, I'm going to sit down. I've already launched into home with bed linens. We've kind of kept this whole 100% cotton. So we started in children's pajamas in 2015, and people approached us and said, the quality is so good. Will you please make adult pajamas?
Yep.
So 2016, we launched into adults. Adults is easy. We do 100% cotton, 100% silk, 100% Pima. So we really have kept with that. We don't use chemicals. We do the softest, best quality fabrics we can find. Now we're going into bed sheets and table linens, and we're kind of expanding with this whole same concept of high quality fabrics. So, and we do also are known for our textiles and our prints. So we can really make everything look really bright and happy. And I just love it.
I love that. I love that you're excited about it still.
Mm-hmm, very much. And then there's also even bigger things on the horizon that I'm too intimidated to talk about right now.
Okay. Intimidated, or you don't want to spill the beans yet?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's it. There's
okay.
So many interesting things afoot, because when I started Petite Plume, I didn't know anybody in the fashion world. I didn't know anyone in the business. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have those connections. And now I look back and I've met these incredible people and I've learned so much, and the opportunities have just amplified.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with your grit and your spirit.
That might have something to do with it. Did you read Amanda Duckworth, Grit?
No, but one day I'll read again.
Oh,
I'm
I know.
Not reading right now. It's my favorite activity and it doesn't happen.
See, you know what my husband says? He said, Emily likes to buy books.
Yes. I have a stack.
I have a stack, and I always have a few there.
Yes.
And I really try. Like, a good vacation for me is to be able to read one whole book.
Oh, it's such a treat.
It is such a treat. But I have four boys. Our last vacation was to Costa Rica. I was joking that before we had kids, my vacations involved a lot less protective headgear.
Yes.
We were doing zip lining. We were doing horseback riding, tubing, ATVs. Every picture we had, I'm wearing a helmet.
Yeah. Right. You gotta, you're in action mode.
Yeah, action mode. And I was like, I just want to sit by the pool with something cold, maybe with a little umbrella in the drink.
I know.
But I'll get there.
You will.
I'll get there.
Yes, it's happening faster than we think. Mm-hmm. Is there anything I didn't ask you today that you wanted to mention or plug?
I've been waiting for you to ask me what people don't know about me.
Well, that's coming. But before I do that,
I'm ready for that.
All right. So before we wrap, what is one piece of advice you'd like to pass on that you either learned the hard way or someone gave to you that was worth mentioning?
One piece of advice. One of my favorite sayings is be prepared and powerful, not pretty and perfect.
Ooh, I'm going to tell that to my daughter.
Yeah. I think there's far too much emphasis right now on perfection in the world that people create on Instagram or TikTok. But walk into a room, be prepared and powerful.
I love that. There's a story that I like to tell about the former president of the WNBA. When I met her, she was getting onto a phone call and she put on her red lipstick and someone's like, this isn't, you know, a Zoom. And she's like, this is my war paint. And it makes me feel powerful even though no one can see me. So the red lipstick's going on. And that really stuck with me, that that was her, like, thing she did to feel powerful.
I love that.
Yeah. It was cool, her here telling that story. That's actually – anyway, she was one of the people that inspired my podcast. So then what would we be surprised to know about you outside of the fact that you were a CIA officer and can have a whole host of things you cannot tell us?
Well, I can, in light of the fact that we just had Super Bowl Sunday, I have four boys and I can throw a wicked spiral.
Really? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. My son, who's sitting here, is probably going to try and get me to do that now.
See, I remember being on a beach in Florida and somebody came up and said, wow, you know, you throw a great spiral for a girl. I was like, for a girl?
Right.
What? But the second thing is I also have a real weakness for – I have four kids, two rescue dogs and two rescue cats. So my Whoa. Home is chaos and I love every minute of it.
Yeah. So Some people aren't good with the chaos, but I like a bit of that too.
I think if you have four kids, you have to thrive in the chaos.
For sure. I think whenever we're like down, you know, one kid or two because they're at activities, it's like really manageable. And I'm just like, wow, what are people with two kids complaining about? This is easy.
Yes, you lose that din. So my two oldest went away to camp a few summers ago for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was just funny because son number three comes up and he doesn't know how to work the remote.
Right.
Because he's never touched it before. He's like, what do I do? I'm usually being told what to do by one of my older brothers.
Oh, my God. I love it. So tell everybody where they can buy Petite Plume and – where to find out more, follow you, all the places.
All the places. Well, please shop us at petiteplume.com. And, of course, we are on Instagram. And we are tackling TikTok soon.
Same.
Oh, that's daunting.
Terrible. An awful experience. And I still haven't mastered. So
maybe we can help each other.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Minkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.